I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is January 26, 2013. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, Part 1 of 2, Obama's War on Religion by Bill Donahue. His essay begins, Obama's Secular Mindset. The American people have been exceedingly fair in drawing a distinction between the personal religious beliefs and practices of presidential candidates and the public policies they adopt. This does not mean that personal predilections are without policy implications. To be sure, there are occasions when key personal anecdotes reveal something important about the mindset of candidates. Take, for example, what Michelle and Barack Obama told People magazine in 2008 about the Obama House rules. Of the 7 House rules they enumerated, most were conventional, but one stood out. Michelle and Barack do not believe in giving Christmas gifts to their children. Barack explained that he wants to teach some limits. The goal is noble, but of all the other choices available to them, setting spending limits, putting a limit on TV time, for some reason they chose the Christmas holiday as their teaching moment. This is more than unusual. Non-Christians as well as agnostics and atheists are known to exchange Christmas gifts. Well, Bill, then you've ruled out the rumor that Obama is an atheist. So which dastardly group refuses to exchange Christmas gifts? He said, against this backdrop, we can make sense of the controversy that erupted during the Obama's first Christmas at the White House. At issue was whether they should break tradition and nix the display of a manger scene. The flap started when the New York Times reported that the Obamas were planning a non-religious Christmas. The leak came from a former White House social secretary who attended a luncheon for the new appointee, Desiree Rogers. Allegedly, the Obamas were not going to permit the display of a nativity scene. When Times reporter Cheryl Gay Stolberg contacted the White House to see if this was true, the story was confirmed. Stolberg was told, there have been internal discussions about making Christmas more inclusive and whether to display the creche. In the end, the Obamas decided to allow a manger scene. Bill, it sounds like Christian pressure to conform is alive and well and can even bring the most powerful American in the nation to his knees. Bill continues, however, Christmas did not escape without controversy. For reasons never explained, the White House Christmas tree was adorned with ornaments depicting drag queens and mass murderers, such as Mao Zedong, who killed 77 million of his own people. Bill, Christians adorned their trees with ornaments of Jesus. He killed a billion humans and countless innocent animals in a flood, if you remember. Well, maybe I'm being a bit unfair. If Jesus is only one-third of the Trinity, then it would only be fair to hang him with about 333 million human deaths. Bill said, given his mindset, it is not surprising that Obama is opposed to posting of the Ten Commandments on public property. Bill, as many Supreme Court cases have proven, the Constitution is also opposed to the posting of the Ten Commandments on public property. Bill wrote, more surprising are his reservations regarding the display of religious symbols on private property. He was only in office a few months when his advance team told officials at Georgetown University that they had better put a drape over any religious symbols that might appear as a backdrop to where the president was going to speak. Bill, he didn't ask them to remove the symbols, only to hide them while he was speaking, so that it would not appear as though he were endorsing a particular religion. He continues, to drive the point home, they made sure that the IHS symbol, a monogram of the name Jesus Christ, was not in sight. Bill, you don't even want to know what I would have done to it. And judging by the aneurysm you had over the desecration of holy crackers, I'll spare you the near-death experience and keep it to myself. Bill writes, on September 15, 2009, Obama addressed the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute's 33rd Annual Awards. It was to be a perfunctory speech, although it didn't turn out that way. Obama did not reference God or the Creator when citing the Declaration of Independence. Bill, the Declaration doesn't reference a God either, only a Creator. Bill wrote, here is what he said. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, endowed with certain inalienable rights. And Bill adds, this is not what Jefferson wrote. Bill, you should read some of Jefferson's thoughts on your religion. Better yet, you should read Jefferson's Bible. I'm sure you'd really get a kick out of it. He wrote, Jefferson was explicit about the origin of our rights, noting that all men were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Bill, to a Muslim, the Creator would be Allah. To a Hindu, that would be Brahman. To rational people, it would be the Big Bang. He said what Obama said was no accident. The remarks were prepared. Moreover, even after being roundly criticized for this startling omission, Obama did the exact same thing only a month later at a fundraiser in Rockville, Maryland. Bill, so you admit that Obama is consistent. He said, the fact is, Obama is uncomfortable with America's Christian heritage. In 2010, he could not bring himself to utter the words, In God We Trust, when speaking in Indonesia about our national motto. Instead, he substituted, E Pluribus Unum. Bill, that was our motto until Christians changed it in the 50s. The original motto included all Americans. The Christian one kicked out about 25% of Americans. Bill wrote, but he is quite comfortable with atheists. Bill, many Christians are comfortable around atheists. You just don't happen to be one of them. Bill writes, in 2010, Obama became the first president in U.S. history to welcome a gathering of atheists. Administration officials met with activists from the Secular Coalition of America, an umbrella group that includes American atheists and other virulently anti-Christian organizations. Bill, you just admitted that Obama was the first president to include all Americans and not just ghost worshipers. Thank you for that admission. What you see as a criticism is actually a compliment and is exactly what a president of all Americans is supposed to do. Also, your choice of the word virulent is much more descriptive of your style than it is of any atheist. Anyone who watched the video of your debate with Christopher Hitchens would have no trouble deciding which debater was virulent. And Bill, it wasn't Hitchens. He wrote, Obama is not equally jittery about all religions. When it comes to Islam, he can be very accommodating. For example, in 2010, he said he supported the right of Muslims to build a mosque at Ground Zero. Bill, so did the First Amendment to the Constitution. That is why you weren't able to stop them. He wrote, the real issue, of course, was not a legal one, it was a moral one. Well, Bill, since you lost the legal argument, of course you are going to now claim it as a moral argument. You will certainly never admit that you were wrong. But the Constitution proved you were. He wrote, Obama refused to discuss this matter. It is not simply Obama who is uncomfortable with religion. It is true of the most active members of his party. Consider what just happened at the Democratic National Convention. On the first day, there was a panel discussion led by a notorious foe of the religious rights of Catholics, namely, Catholics for Choice. Bill, so you are actually going to claim that a notorious foe of Catholic religious rights is a group of Catholics? Yes, I believe you just did. He wrote, this group, which is nothing more than a well-funded letterhead sponsored by the likes of the Ford Foundation, it has no members, has twice been condemned by the Bishops' Conference as a fraud. Perversely, Catholics for Choice address the subject of religious liberty. This would be like having the Klan speak about race relations at the Republican National Convention. Bill, great comparison. You don't get it, do you? Here's a hint. If the Klan were allowed to speak on race relations, it could only be at the Republican National Convention. Bill continues, until 2012, every Democratic Party platform made some reference to God. But things changed this year, demonstrating once again that the administration has a God problem. In 2008, the platform mentioned that government gives everyone willing to work hard the chance to make the most of their God-given potential. Deleted from the 2012 platform was the part, gives everyone willing to work hard the chance to make the most of their God-given potential. Worse, when CNN's Piers Morgan asked Democratic National Committee Chair Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz why someone deliberately excised the word God, she replied, "I can assure you that no one has deliberately taken God out of the platform." After listening to this remarkable response, Morgan pressed her again, asking, "So it was an accident?" She refused to comment. Once the pushback began, the Obama team folded and reinstated God. But even this process turned out to be a disaster. After ignoring the expressed will of the delegates, a voice vote to put God back in the platform was split. It didn't come close to the two-thirds majority that was needed. It was ruled by fiat to have passed. Terry Holland, a New Mexico delegate, made a very revealing remark when she said that the revisions were made to kowtow to the religious right. In other words, thoughtful Democrats would never want to pay homage to God in their platform. Bill, that's because they understand the Constitution. Unfortunately, they did cave in to the religious right, because America is still overrun in the 21st century by ghost worshipers, and they need their votes if they want to remain competitive. Bill Donahue's next section is titled Obama's Secular Allies. It begins, "To learn more about Obama's approach to religion, consider his base of religious friends. He sat for 20 years listening to Reverend Jeremiah Goddamn America Wright." Bill, I see your point. He definitely sounds like an atheist to me. Bill writes, "Another clergyman Obama greatly admires is Reverend J. Alfred Smith Sr., an Oakland, California pastor who was honored in 1975 by the violent Black Panther Party. In 1990, he was given an award by the Anti-Semitic Nation of Islam. In Catholic circles, Obama's favorite priest is Father Michael Flegger, a race-baiting preacher from Chicago who has welcomed Nation of Islam minister Louis Farrakhan to speak in his church." Bill, and this is the guy whom you see as anti-religious? You just listed three clergymen whom he admires. Bill, I think maybe you've been spending a little too much time in the communion grape juice room. Bill writes, "It was in Obama's first job where he cultivated his ties to the Catholic community. To be exact, he laid anchor with Catholic activists, not with Catholics in the pew." Bill, so your problem is that he didn't choose your kind of Christians. So he is anti-religious? Brilliant, Bill. Absolutely brilliant. He wrote, "In 1985, he took a job with Saul Alinsky, trained community organizer. From then on, his network with Catholic left-wing operatives would only expand. What he took from these contacts was not Catholicism, rather, it was how to work with the Catholic left to promote a radical agenda." Bill, it's nice to see all that brotherly Christian love pouring out of you for your fellow Catholics. And you don't seem to realize that as you keep piling on evidence that he is anything but anti-religion, you are contradicting your own position. Bill wrote, "Those same associations paid a hefty dividend when it came time for Obama to launch his Catholic National Advisory Council in 2008. Bill, was that part of Obama's war on religion? He said, "Quite frankly, Obama's Catholic friends are almost all Catholic dissidents, at least on the major social issues." Bill, Catholic dissidents? Would they be the ones who won't stay quiet about your pedophile priest problem? He wrote, "In the last presidential election, there wasn't one of his 26 Catholic advisors who accepted the Catholic Church's teaching on abortion, embryonic stem cell research, and school vouchers." Bill, rational people also reject your church's teaching on those issues. Even many irrational people see the folly of siding with your church on issues in which it is clearly wrong. He wrote that almost all of them agreed 100% of the time with NARAL, the radical abortion organization, was hardly surprising. True to form, the 2012 group, Catholics for Obama, is populated with dissidents like Representative Rosa DeLauro, a staunch abortion rights advocate who has a history of openly defying the Catholic Church. Bill, in the good old days, people who openly defied the Catholic Church were dealt with in such a way that they no longer had to worry about having a history. He wrote, "While this is hardly unusual anymore, it is still mind-boggling to learn that Catholic Democrats' Political Action Committee is so queasy about Orthodox Catholicism that it features a Catholic League Watch database online. What scares them about the Catholic League remains a mystery." Bill, look in the mirror. He continues, "Obama's network of Catholic dissidents came into play when he selected Kathleen Sebelius as his Secretary of Health and Human Services. Her longtime involvement in the pro-abortion movement calls into serious question her status as a Catholic. Catholics can excommunicate themselves when they persistently and deliberately foster policies that are considered intrinsically evil by the Catholic Church. Abortion is certainly one of those evils." Sebelius was not simply a friend of George Tiller, the physician who specialized in killing babies who were 80% born. She raised money for him. "Bill, I know that guy, Tiller. That's the doctor who was murdered in his own church by an anti-abortion nut job. What did you do to celebrate that murder, Bill? Take the family to Disney World?" He wrote, "So off the charts is Sebelius in her passion for abortion rights that she admits to never backing a single abortion-restricting law. For these reasons, Archbishop Joseph Naumann of Kansas City, Kansas, once advised her not to present herself for Holy Communion." Bill, isn't communion that cannibal ceremony that I've heard so much about? You people are fucking sick, dude. He wrote, "There are several other persons chosen by Obama who have had their problems with Catholicism. Harry Knox, a gay activist with the Human Rights Campaign, was appointed to serve on the Advisory Council for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. Another gay activist who hates Catholicism is Kevin Jennings. A former drug user and irresponsible teen counselor, Jennings was chosen to be the safe school czar. He is also a Christian basher who belongs to an urban anti-Catholic group, ACT UP. It is also the appointment of Chai Feldblum to join the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission that made Christians wince. The Georgetown law professor was on record saying that in conflicts between religious liberty and sexual rights, the latter should triumph. Never mind that religious liberty is a First Amendment right, and that sexual rights are nowhere mentioned in the Constitution. Feldblum was adamant in her conviction that religious freedom should bow to sexual rights." Bill, religious freedom ends at the point where the exercise of those rights infringe on the rights and freedoms of other citizens. You know, Bill, things like slavery. That is one biblical religious right that you are no longer allowed to exercise. Stoning heretics and adulterers is another. The First Amendment doesn't grant you the freedom to inflict your religious beliefs on others. It only grants you the right to worship your invisible ghosts without fear of government interference. He continues, "Feldblum is actually more extreme than this. She signed a statement in 2006, Beyond Same-Sex Marriage, that is the most astounding assault on marriage ever written. Every conceivable partnership and relationship was deemed worthy of governmental and private recognition. This means that both the public and the private sector must grant rights to queer couples who decide to jointly create and raise a child with another queer person or couple in two households. Churches obviously would be expected to comply as they are part of the private sector. Bill, you are not expected to comply, only to tolerate. There is a difference. Bill Donahue continues, it was not good enough for Obama to hire persons who reject Christian tenets or who speak coarsely about Christianity. He sought to hire activists who want to punish the Catholic Church. His choice of Don Johnson to be Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Office of Legal Counsel proves this charge. Though she eventually withdrew her name from consideration, a contentious fight lasting more than a year precipitated her withdrawal. The former ACLU and Naral lawyer should never have been nominated in the first place. In the late 1980s, she cut her legal teeth by working on an ACLU lawsuit that sought to strip the Catholic Church of its tax-exempt status. We can only guess what she might have been up to had she gotten the job. Bill, your tax-exempt status is predicated on the condition that you refrain from interfering in government. Obviously, you have violated your part of the agreement. The only reason the government does not violate its part and start taxing the church is because there are still a dominant number of ghost worshippers in America, and they would never allow it. But your numbers and power are shrinking, Bill. Unless Jesus gets here soon, as you guys keep predicting, you will be stripped of the status that you never should have been given in the first place. He wrote, Obama's allies in the gay rights community led him to oppose the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on homosexuals in the military, even before it was repealed. Bill, how do you know he didn't come to that conclusion on his own? Is it because you are trying to paint him as someone who cannot think for himself and is manipulated by others? He wrote, even more revealing, Obama's steadfast refusal to enforce the Defense of Marriage Act shows how his commitment to the gay rights agenda trumps his duties as the nation's chief executive. Bill, unfortunately for your position, the Supreme Court has ruled Defense of Marriage Act unconstitutional. That means Obama fulfilled his duties as the nation's chief executive. He concludes by saying, it also explains his support for gay marriage. In the 1990s, while running for the Illinois State Senate, Obama said, I favor legalizing same-sex marriage and would fight efforts to prohibit such marriages. However, when he ran for U.S. Senate in 2004, he backed away from this position and did so again when running for president in 2008. This was pure posturing. In 2008, he opposed Proposition 8 in California, affirming marriage between a man and a woman, showing his true colors. In 2012, he reverted back to his original support for the right of two men to marry. Bill, what about two women? Oh yeah, I almost forgot. To the religious, women don't count. And now we move to the science segment. Today's topic. The origin of intelligence and mental illness have been linked to an ancient genetic accident. Scientists have discovered for the first time how humans and other mammals have evolved to have intelligence. They have identified the moment in history when the genes that enable us to think and reason evolved. This point, 500 million years ago, provided our ability to learn complex skills, analyze situations, and have flexibility in the way in which we think. The research also shows a direct link between the evolution of behavior and the origins of brain diseases. Scientists believe that the same genes that improved our mental capacity are also responsible for a number of brain disorders. This groundbreaking work has implications for how we understand the emergence of psychiatric disorders and will offer new avenues for the development of new treatments. The study shows that intelligence in humans developed as a result of an increase in the number of brain genes in our evolutionary ancestors. Researchers suggest that a simple invertebrate animal living in the sea 500 million years ago experienced a genetic accident, which resulted in extra copies of these genes being made. This animal's descendants benefited from these extra genes, leading to behaviorally sophisticated vertebrates, including humans. The research team studied the mental abilities of mice and humans using comparative tasks that involved identifying objects on touchscreen computers. They then combined results of these behavioral tests with information from the genetic codes of various species to work out when different behaviors evolved. They found that higher mental functions in humans and mice were controlled by the same genes. The study also showed that when these genes were mutated or damaged, they impaired higher mental functions. Their work showed that the price of higher intelligence and more complex behaviors is more mental illness. I'll insert an editorial comment at this point. Sounds to me like they've just explained religion. And the article concludes, the researchers had previously shown that more than 100 childhood and adult brain diseases are caused by gene mutations. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Richard Feynman. I'll skip the biography as he has been previously quoted. Here is the quote from Richard Feynman. Our imagination is stretched to the utmost, not as in fiction, to imagine things which are not really there, but just to comprehend things which are there.
Are you ready, Goose?